Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. You can play Pick'em, pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower total in each stat for this week's games for a chance to win big. You can actually win up to 100 times your money in a single night. That's right. I didn't say 10. I didn't say 20. Up to 100 times your money. Pick between 2 and 5 players. Build a Pick'em entry. My favorite feature, you can make rivals picks. Hit 2 players against each other. Wembanyama versus Nikola Jokic. Tim Hardaway Jr. versus Norm Powell. Kawhi Leonard versus Steph Curry. Who knows? Maybe Grayson Allen versus Pat Connaughton. You get where I'm going with that. You can do it all with Underdog Fantasy. Make sure you sign up today with the promo code DING. That's D-I-N-G. And get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant Pick'em special. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the app store. And don't forget to register with our promo code DING, D-I-N-G, to get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant Pick'em special. Must be 18 or older and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.ncpgambling.org.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Hello, I'm Paul Giamatti.
And I'm Stephen Asma.
Join us on the Chinwag Podcast every Wednesday, where we trade the banal and the boring for the super strange and bizarre.
They committed human sacrifice?
I did bring up human sacrifice, yes.
You sure did.
That just went by fast. Gotta
casually toss that out.
I would like to have an alien hatch its young inside.
Holy shit, really?
She saw world peace, and I saw demons coming out of the wall.
I will say that there was a green couch outside of the principal's office, and you sat on it if you had lice or if you got into trouble.
They wake you up from the goo pods to live in reality, and you're naked and screaming. It's like...
Follow us for free on Apple Podcasts and all major podcast platforms.
For more information, go to chinwagpod.fm.
and find enlightenment through our Instagram or TikTok at ChinwagPod or on Twitter at Chinwag_pod.
When you listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, the comedy podcast, you get a belly full of laughs and a head full of real information. Our gallimaufry of expert guests answer questions on stuff adults need to know. I have mold in my dwelling. What do I do? What's gerrymandering? What happens chemically when I fall in love? How do I handle a parent-teacher conference? What are microbes? Listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. Solve problems, get laughs.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I'm holding a mic in my hands and now I'm talking all alone. Okay.
Welcome to Cinephobe, the podcast where we break down the movies you're afraid to admit you love. I'm Zach Harper, joined by Amin El Hassan. Anthony Mace produces this show. It's about the bad movies we think don't get enough respect. Today on Cinephobe, this week on Cinephobe, the 1985 comedy Spies Like Us, starring Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd. Legendary director John Landis directed it. If you're unfamiliar with his name, he directed Trading Places, Animal House, Blues Brothers, the Michael Jackson thriller short, Three Amigos, Coming to America, and one episode of Franklin and Bash. Synopsis for Spies Like Us. Yeah, that's what it says on his IMDb. Synopsis for Spies Like Us. Two bumbling government employees think they are U.S. spies, only to discover that they are actually decoys for nuclear war. The tagline with spies like these, who needs enemies? $22 million budget, grossed $60 million in the U.S., before you listen to the rest of this podcast, Spies Like Us is available on HBO Go. I'd never seen this movie before.
For real?
Yeah, it's one that I was aware of, and I was kind of like, I think I've seen this movie. And then when I started watching, I was like, nope, I've never seen this before.
Wow.
First of all, it was just one that slipped through.
Love the taglines with spies like these, who needs enemies? That's a play, of course, off of the phrase, with friends like these, who needs enemies? Which in the 80s was immensely popular. I don't think you guys realize, like in the 80s, that was it. With friends like these, who needs enemies? It was in every cartoon, every TV show, every movie. They had like that line at some point or another and a bunch of different plays on that word. Like, yeah, for instance, with spies like these, who needs enemies? So
with that was the 80s version of, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Yes, it was absolutely everywhere. Absolutely. What a great analogy, right? That's a great comparison right there. As always, my notes, Zach.
Yes.
The first line of the notes is always kind of like, how are we going to think about this movie? My first line today was, do y'all remember the Cold War?
I vaguely remember it. So I think, when did it end? Like 89, 90, something like that?
Yeah, something.
88-ish. Like, yeah. So I was born in 82. Like, I know of it. I was aware of like Russia being the enemy and all that stuff, right? You know, like all these movies that like displayed that. I was big into, you know, spy movies and ninja movies and all this stuff. And it was always some kind of Russian involved, but Russians, like the Cold War was a thing.
Yeah. If you don't remember what it was like, go watch Grease 2. They pretty much hit the nail on the head. Like at all times we were in constant fear of the Soviet Union, of the Russians. Right. And like all the movies were all based on like, that's the big, enemy out there that we have to worry about. They're the stock villains in every or most movies in the 80s. Boy, am I glad that that's over. We can trust and love the Russians to do the right thing. They're not our enemies anymore. Thank God that all ended back in 88.
No, we're all good. Andrei Kirilenko ended it, right?
Andrei
Kirilenko came over and bridged the gap.
Well, he's the one that said, if you can change and I can change, maybe we can all change.
Right, exactly.
And that's how it happened. Yeah.
That's how it happens in the history books.
I picked this movie. Originally, I picked Mr. Magoo. I'm sorry for anyone who watched Mr. Magoo. We will get to it at some point, I promise you. But it's just because...
It's actually a threat, not a promise.
Yeah. Spies Like Us actually goes off of HBO Go at the end of July. So I wanted to catch this before it falls off the free list. And so this gives everyone an opportunity to catch this movie. I'm shocked, Zach, that you've never watched this movie.
Yeah, just somehow it was one of those that I'd always assumed that I had. And you know what I think I mixed it up with? It's going to sound really stupid. I think I just mixed it up with the fact that I had seen Stripes so much that I just assumed I had seen this movie.
Question for you, Zach.
Yes.
We're going to get into details, but just No, you know what? I was going to ask you, did you like it or not? I have a feeling, because here's the thing. The reason why was because, all right, I got the, I have like the Hollywood Reporter, I think, will put out, okay, these are the movies that are about to fall off of Netflix at the end of this. These are the movies that fall off of HBO at the end of this one. Saw it on the list, and I said, oh, man, I love that movie. I've watched it a million times, albeit not that much recently. And so I was just curious. I was like, wonder how it's going on Rotten Tomatoes. I think it'd be like, I'd be like an 80s or something like that. It was a 32%. And the audience didn't like it either. No. And I've never met anyone who didn't like Spies Like Us. Like, I watched it with my dad in the movies back in the day. I've watched it with my brother over the years. I watched it with my friends. We've always loved this movie. So I never even considered the fact that it could be eligible for Cinephobe. But once I found out it was, I had to bump Mr. Magoo, and here we are.
32% from the critics, as you mentioned, on only 25 reviews, which is weird for a movie that's 34 years old. Only 25 reviews. Audience 56% on 33,000 ratings, which, if you notice from previous episodes, we're doing like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of ratings on these. So not, I don't think a lot of people have watched this.
That's correct. This is one of the funniest movies of the 80s. I'm going to say it right now.
One review is from Paul Adanasio from the Washington Post. That Chase is god-awful is no surprise. He's been running on empty for years with variations on that tired I'm Chevy Chase and you're not riff.
Okay, yes, but at the time he hadn't been running on it for years. At the time it was prime Chevy Chase, and even though now we know that Chevy Chase is an awful, possibly racist human being, at the time he was lovable. He was delightful, and it comes across in this movie.
I'll say that, like, I tried to watch the movie in two different mindsets at the same time. I tried to watch it in the mindset of watching this for the first time. Let's pretend I'm watching it in the 80s or 90s. Would I have thought this was funny on first, like, you know, because everything's builds, comedy builds and all this stuff, and comedy changes and is different and everything. But, like, right. I tried to think, like, all right, first time, if I was like younger, would I, without the knowledge of comedy that I've, or the experience of comedy that I've had in watching so many things over the decades, like, would I find this movie funny? And then two, I tried to watch in the sense of, like, would this hold up today? Like, if I had seen it back then, does it hold up today?
So those are the two things. Are these answers you're going to give now or give later? Because I'm very fascinated.
It's a tease for the Fober File section of this podcast.
He's very good. He's very good at this, ladies and gentlemen.
So let's one familiar face you might have is one of the military officials, Bruce Davison. He's the evil senator in the X-Men movies. I don't know if you guys remember.
I didn't put two and two together, but yeah. They also have the guy from Unsolved Mysteries.
Robert, they do.
What's his name? What's my man? Who also played the Captain Stryker's superior in the movie Airplane.
Right.
Another cameo in this movie. I don't know if you picked up on it, and we'll get to the scene in a little bit. The proctor for the exam, Frank Oz.
Oh, that was Frank Oz.
Also known as the voice of Fozzie Bear, Yoda, and countless other lovable Muppets that you've seen over the years.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, man, that was Frank Oz. Okay.
Yep.
All right, so let's jump into the movie. We open up in a snowy area. Obviously somewhere foreign, we would assume, because there's a Russian military excursion where this giant missile is being carried and it's just mowing down trees and everyone's running and we cut to space and we've got satellites and there's a normal looking satellite that said there's no military value on the satellite and a door comes down, lens comes out, taking high-res pictures, sending those into the U.S. The U.S. spies are transporting it, and we get to our military officials who finally get a chance to check this out. A man has a briefcase with the photos in the briefcase. It is handcuffed to him, and he talks very loudly when he presents the photos, of the secret photos.
Oh, yeah, that's the courier.
The courier, right.
Who they then stuff into a closet. Well, he's got the pictures in the briefcase. The briefcase is chained to his wrist, and then the pictures themselves are sewn into the interior of the briefcase. So literally, he cannot be detached from this information at any point. So what they end up doing is they shove him in a closet, and then the chain just trickles out of the closet under, you know, on the door, and then they open the briefcase and look at the pictures. Military people come and look at the pictures. My man from Unsolved Mysteries then goes to the corner and pours himself a glass of brandy, to which I noticed in the movies, people always have liquor in their offices, but I've never actually seen that in real life. Zach, have you seen anyone with liquor in their office?
I don't think I have. Maybe that's an old school thing, though. Maybe also, that used to be it.
Also, they never have the liquor in the original bottle. They will pour it into a separate kind of decanter or something like that.
So, funny thing about that is I got into scotch a couple years ago. And I bought one of those decanters, have never once poured it into one of those.
I mean, it's just like, what's the point? It's just
empty. You're right. Exactly.
It's already in a device. I don't need to put it into another device to pour it into something else.
Right. And then I'm going to have to clean that thing later. So I own one of those, but I've never used it. I'm going to use it one day.
Just what? Like, you got to wear a robe with it and smoke a pipe.
I'm going to wear a robe. I do have a pocket watch. I got to attach that to the robe. Yeah.
My brother was into that. There was a point in time when my brother was into pocket watches, and I was like, "You douche." There's no way to go about it without looking like
it. I got it from a hipster Minneapolis clothing store.
Of course you did. Is this the same place you got your monocle from?
No. Do you know why I got the monocle? Did I ever tell you that? I bought the monocle from Warby Parker because at the time they were saying. At the time, they would donate a pair of glasses for every pair of glasses you bought. And so I bought the monocle thinking they're going to donate a monocle. Like it's going to be a product for product. And I thought they could donate a monocle to an underprivileged child somewhere. And I thought that could help that kid rise to prominence.
So you basically wanted to be the biggest kind of dick there is. Like some kid needs glasses. Sorry, kid, the guy only bought a monocle.
And they flip him. They
flip it to him. He gets one. I'm like, maybe one day someone else will buy a monocle and then I can be a real boy.
There was a line delivered from the evil senator from X-Men in this where the guy is talking loudly and he gets admonished before he's shoved in the closet. And he said, it's not your fault. You're stupid.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, there was a lot of lines like that.
Also, I thought the courier looked a lot like if Randy Quaid and Matt Harpering had a love child. I don't know if you looked at him that closely, but I did.
I didn't look at him that closely.
Well, trust me on that one.
So anyway, so the general premise is the Russians are making a move. They need to get two operatives in there to infiltrate and perhaps even defuse this thing before it goes any further. Right. The problem is the two best operatives they had have been captured and killed in action. And so they got to get two more. And they talk about
more, right?
They don't want to lose two more. They've had already too many casualties. So one of the military guys comes up with the idea, well, let's have two teams. One team of operatives or the actual operatives doing the mission, and then another set of decoys, right? And quasi expendable people. And so they're on the search for expendable people. And that's when we are introduced first to the character of Chevy Chase. Emmett Fitzhugh, I believe is his name.
Yes.
And he works for the State Department in a, pencil pushing job. He's at a desk and it's played by Chevy Chase. So you already know he's a complete slapdick. He's sitting with his feet up on the table, watching an old movie, which I believe Ronald Reagan is in.
Yeah. Ronald Reagan's in it.
Yeah. And it's a musical and he's singing along and he's got headphones on listening very loudly.
You can't hear anybody.
Can't hear anybody. The guy next to him is telling them, holding up a booklet and mouthing something that we can't hear because all we hear is the music from the movie. So finally he takes off the headphones and the guy says, aren't you taking the Foreign Service Board exam tomorrow? And Chevy Chase says, yeah, but no big deal because my grandfather was an envoy and my father was an envoy. I was born into the trade, which I noted is the exact same plot from the movie Monsters University, where Sully
sure
goes to Monster University to go to get a scaring degree, but he says, I don't have to study or do anything because my grandfather was a scarer and my father was a scarer. So, I was born into the trade. I thought that was an interesting connection. And just goes to show that even the great movies of today borrow heavily off of the movies of yesterday.
Wow. What a nice little life lesson there.
Yes.
And so, yeah, he also says he's taken it three times before. He's not worried about it. And then
that's the reason why he's not worried. So it's all multiple choice.
It's all multiple choice. And he says, well, I'm going to go meet with an official from the testing facility. Right. He goes, I'm going to go meet with this official anyway. I'll see what they say. Cut to a new scene. He's in bed with her. They've already had sex. He's a ladies man.
And she says, I hope you didn't call me here for that, meaning to help him get out of the test. And he says, no, it's actually just, I don't know where my head's been at lately. Talk to my urologist. And before she can finish, and wherever he can finish, she says, don't tell me you're dying. And he says, well, I'm not going to tell you that anymore. There's so many lines in this movie, man, where I just fucking lost it.
And then we cut to the basement of this like big facility. That's where we meet Dan Aykroyd. He's working on some tech stuff, some spy tech stuff. He's trying to learn how to read Russian. And we find out he's been breaking down codes with a decoder from a cereal box. Like, this dude is legitimate in his ability to use tech, break down tech, and break down, you know, barriers of coded language or any kind of like foreign language. Like, he is the real deal, except his supervisor has screwed him over by letting him know, oh, by the way, you got to take that exam tomorrow. And he was supposed to tell him weeks ago, so he had time to study. Did not tell him any of that.
Supervisor is trying to sabotage his career, basically, make sure that he's kept in this basement doing all his dirty work and doesn't get to kind of advance in any way in life.
Sub basement D25.
Yeah, right.
My favorite part is he's the supervisor says you broke the code with a kid's toy, basically. And he says, yeah, he says, do it again. Use the machines this time, the computers this time. And he says, I did twice. And he hands him the thing. And so the supervisor basically has run out of like objections to what Dan Aykroyd can do. And so he just yells, clean up this desk. And honestly, Zach, that same exact thing happened to me when I worked for the Suns.
Really? You
know, when I worked for the Suns, and this was after Steve Kerr, David Griffin left, the people who knew what they were doing and the people who didn't know what they were doing came in. And they had like a bunch of like stuff that they want. I was just chilling. They were like, what have you done? I was like, I did that. Like, well, did you do that? Yeah, I did it. Cross checked against it. It's all here. And then the guy, I sort of got looks at it and said, well, clean up this desk then. I'm like, what does that have to do with anything? He said, you say you want to be part of a winning organization, but your desk is dirty. I said, if you can explain to me how a dirty desk impacts our wins and losses, I'll listen to it. You're just saying he didn't last that much longer with the Suns. So anyways, he also tells the guy that, hey, man, I was about to hook up your family with free Disney Channel.
Right.
But now I won't. Right. So the whole idea is that, you know, he's the technical kind of intelligence guy.
Right.
And Chevy Chase is the diplomat, the from a diplomatic family. Father worked in the State Department, et cetera, et cetera. They go to take this test. And Zach, when I tell you, this is one of my favorite scenes in cinematic history. I was crying. Tell me, I want to hear it from your mouth.
So it starts out where Chevy Chase comes in. He's has clearly a fake broken arm. He's got an eye patch on, right? He's clearly going to try to cheat and everything or get curry some favor. And so as it starts out, like he looks at the eye patch, like he sits down, they're taking the test. He looks at the eye patch, gets some answers off the eye patch. And I thought, oh boy, here we go. This is going to be really stupid. Really thought that. Really? And then he pulls.
First of all, it doesn't start there. It starts with he walks up to the proctor and says, before we start, can you hold on to my wallet? There's $1,000 in there.
Oh,
maybe
right.
Or maybe there isn't. It reminds me of the scene in Money Talks where the very beginning, they're loading them from the holding cell onto the bus.
Yeah.
And Chris Tucker has been talking trash this whole time. And as they walk by one of the armed guards, he says, hey, man, let me borrow your gun. it's such a nonchalant line.
Yeah. So he cheats off the eye patch. And I thought, oh, my God, this is going to be really stupid. And then he pulls notes out of his mouth and looks at them. And the proctor sees this. And then he removes his fake arm. He removes notes from his fake arm and like from the cast and clearly uses his arm that he was hiding this whole time. He starts going through all these things. He's trying to find out what KGB means from Dan Aykroyd, who he's sitting next to. He like goes into like this, oh, I can't handle the pressure. Like he gets up.
Oh, Zach. You're what? Not going to gloss over this. This is like one of my favorite scenes. So we go from the written man answer in the mouth to the answer that's in the cast that he pulls out with his real arm from the fake arm. Then he turns to Dan Aykroyd and starts doing the fake cough.
All right.
And so Dan Aykroyd looks over and he writes on the thing, which again, think about it, this is the height of the Cold War, right? Like this is, man, everyone's mind is on Russia. This dude writes on his test, what does KGB stand for? So Dan Aykroyd writes the answer and like underlines KGB for him. And so Chevy Chase coughs.
Thank you. God, the pressure! I can't take it! I can't take it! I can't do it.
You know, he starts like going through this whole thing and he's like walking over and like looking at tests and like reading stuff and taking tests off people's desks and everything to get more answers. And like, I was dying at this point. Like, it's such a good build of like cheating a little bit, cheating more to just this blatant cheating that is just like it was so slapstick and so ridiculous. But I was in the whole time. Like after the iPad, I'm in the whole time.
That what makes the scene is that literally from the very first moment, Frank Oz, who plays the proctor, notices.
Yeah.
Like all of this is
he's not getting away with anything.
He's staring at him the whole time, and in fact, at some point, presses a button. And some cameras come out of the vents and they start taping all this that's happening. So needless to say, they get caught. They get sent to the office. They play some other stuff that happened that didn't make it into the scene.
Oh, my God. That shit.
Where Dan Aykroyd stands up and says, give this man some room to breathe. And he just starts basically distracting while Chevy Chase literally lying on the floor, copying the answers off the test.
Right.
With his non-broken hand out of the broken cast, like it was so over the top,
and like it. What was funny to me is I don't know why this part was so funny to me, but the fact that Dan Aykroyd just decided to cheat, like he doesn't know Chevy Chase, right? Like this is a stranger. He just decides, like, all right, man, I'm gonna help this dude.
Right. So they're in the office. They show them this stuff. They turn it off and say, okay, so what are we gonna happen? Are we gonna get fired? Are we gonna suspended? Is there gonna be like a criminal proceeding against us? And the bad guy from X-Men and the other guy tell him, actually, we loved it. Like, this espionage is not like a Boy Scouts thing. We want people who are resourceful, who will stop at nothing to get something done. And most importantly, we like that you guys work together as a team. So they tell them,
we're bumping you guys up to like level 20 or something like that, right?
And sending you out into the field.
Yeah.
They're ecstatic. When does training begin? Training begins right now. And so they send them on. The next thing you know, they're on a plane with a bunch of paratroopers. And they say, well, they wouldn't throw us out this is for everyone else. They're going to land us somewhere. And a light goes off, door opens. They literally shove them both out the door. They fly, they parachute down. That was one of the scenes where I was like, okay, they spent a little bit too much time on this.
On the parachute.
It was funny. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. They shove them out this, let them land. We don't have to see the, whoa!
Yeah, it's a lot of that. We'll get that again with the G-Force training.
I like that. Well, hold on.
Did you?
No. So, like, because, like, the jumping out the plane was just, like, literally the camera spinning to indicate that they're tumbling, right? And then they land, right? The G-Force training, we'll get there in a second.
They land in the forest on top of each other.
Yes.
And ninjas come out.
Yes.
Ninjas come out of nowhere and they're like chopping trees and like threatening them. And
first of all, there's like an owl or something hooting. And he says, and Chevy Chase says, what's that?
Oh, and Dan Aykroyd says, it's a dick for.
And they say, what's a dick for? Mostly for peeing. Again, stupid line, but I chuckled. I laughed. Ninjas come out. And they do the whole like ninja thing where they're like playing with the blades and everything. And Chevy Chase says, they say, well, you do something. You're the diplomat. Talk to him. Chevy Chase says, stop right there and I'll bring back the sun.
and then he shows a picture of his sister. He goes, this is my sister. You can have her.
I hear she's really good. So Dan Aykroyd obviously realizes man's a moron, picks up a branch and says, come on any closer. I'm going to swing this at you. To which Chevy Chase says, hear that? He's threatening you. Come on, let's get him. Yeah. Dan Aykroyd responds, man, come on, show some balls. Chevy Chase says,
I think we're past the point of impressing.
Yeah, I think it's too late to impress them. It is one of the greatest back and forth.
Yeah, it's such good riffing.
And that was like, if you love the movie, let me put it this way. If you love the movie Hitch.
Yeah.
Where it basically the not Hitch. Is it Fletch? My bad. Fletch,
right.
Fletch. The premise of Fletch is basically everyone else is living in this movie, right? Or in the movie, everyone's living a kind of a very movie way of saying, hey, what's the big idea, buddy? And Chevy Chase is basically just making jokes on everything everyone says, right? Like, knocks on a door, woman opens the door in a towel, says, how can I help you? And he says, my car just hit a water buffalo. Can I borrow a towel? Right? She never responds or reacts. Like, no one actually reacts.
Yeah,
They keep on in their, like, movie dialogue while he just says these ridiculous things. That's what that scene is, right? Just no one's reacting, but just hilarious. All right, so turns out this was just a test or whatever.
Yeah, it's a demonstration to see how they react, right? The colonel is – he stops it. He then – says like, oh, this is a test, you guys failed, blah blah blah, and then they're like, well, what would, like, how are we supposed to do this? And he's like, basically just beats the shit out of all the ninjas. It's like something, so, you know, basically like that.
And so what begins next is a montage, but it's not really a montage, it's one of those,
yeah, it's like a very like slow montage, right? Yeah, like, so, it's really so, just like scene.
Yes So they're like, hey, we're gonna do your training. All right, first of all, this is the obstacle course, but we like to do it this way. And then they get tortured in all of these different tests, including the G-force test. I can't believe you guys did not laugh.
Can't believe you did laugh at this. Look, I'm in on this movie up until this point.
Oh my god! So
the G-force. It's just Maze. You got to back me up. That was not comedy.
It was. It's not even an effect. They just
can they, you know, make a funny face? Like, that's all just, that is.
But so here's the thing. Okay, so here's what happens. So first of all of these, as I said, all these tests that get tortured, and the tests get more and more ridiculous as you go on, right? First it's just like, hey, crawl through the mud or whatever. Then there's one where they're just literally in a plane that falls from the top of a building and crashes into the ground. Like, it's just like, these aren't tests. This is just, we're gonna torture these guys. So they get to the G-force thing and they spin around and it spins faster and faster. And they're making these silly faces to indicate like, oh, we're in a G-force thing, which is okay. In and of itself, it's like, okay, haha. But when they come out and they're walking the hallway, their hair standing up and their faces are frozen in those ridiculous looks. And they say, hey, you want to get some coffee? Yeah, that's a good idea. Yo, you didn't laugh when they're walking down the hallway, man?
I promise you, I did not laugh in any way.
y'all are wild, and that was fucking hilarious,
man. That was hilarious.
That was not hilarious.
Slapstick comedy at its
best.
Oh
my god. All right. So they decide to send these guys to Pakistan. They drop them off in this large supply crate. They enter the village.
You think our contact is here?
Oh,
let's find out. Who led the American League in home runs in 1953?
Right. Everyone draws guns on, right? Like, that was his way of testing. Then Dan Aykroyd pulls out. No. Chevy Chase pulls out this booklet that's of conversational Pashto. Is that how you say it?
Yes.
And says, here, I got it. It basically says, let me be free and you can use his head for polo. To which then they're like, he's like, is this normal? He's like, yeah, that's how they greet you. And these guys are just like holding his head, rubbing his head, sizing his head up for polo.
Two very quintessentially 80s guys come up. I'm talking about
blonde, preppy, white 80s guys.
Yeah. Pastel colors. And their names are like Bud something. It was like the very 80s names, like the kind of names that you don't see today. And the way they talk and everything about them. So they say, hey, we're your contacts. Come on with it. Get into the Jeep's over here, right? They get in the Jeep. As they're driving down like this desolate road, Dan Aykroyd says, hey, what time is it? And the guy checks his watch. And that's when we see the watch, while a digital watch, is the brand name is in Russian Cyrillic alphabet.
Right.
Oh, Dan Aykroyd puts two and two together. these guys are not our contacts, they're actually spies, but he can't communicate it to Chevy Chase right there because obviously these guys are all sitting together in the car. So he instead says, hey, can we stop because I need to take a leak, and gets out and then says to Chevy Chase, you should go too. To which Chevy Chase says, what are you, my mother?
Yeah.
And then followed by like a shrug and a laugh at the other guy's like, what's the deal with this guy? So he keeps trying to, you know.
He's like, really? You don't feel the pressure of against your bladder wall of all this liquid building up? You wouldn't like to have that full relief and know that there's nothing in there? Like, he's really trying to like let him know, you got to go pee.
So finally, he gets the hint. They start walking. He says, these guys are not our contacts. They're Russian spies. How do you know? The watch, et cetera, et cetera. And then they look up. And even though they've been walking away from the car, presumably to pee, they look up and the two guys are standing in front of them. Basically, I don't want to like belabor it. They get confronted about it. And then they basically stomp on their feet and put their hat over their head.
Get on the Jeep. They drive away.
Drive away. They get shot at. They end up in another little village.
They're swarmed by Afghani freedom fighters. And they say, oh, these are our allies. We're Americans, right?
So this is the point where I put in my notes. This is crazy because when this movie came out, this is the truth. Like, these people were American allies and the Russians are bad, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And who could have known 30 years later, these are the people who are like basically the new number one enemy to America in the world, right?
Right.
This is where Al-Qaeda came from, basically. These people that the Americans had armed to help again in insurgents against Russian occupation in Afghanistan. So I thought it was a wonderful little bit of irony right there. He says, hey, these are our allies. We're Americans. Next thing you know, they're tied up upside down and about to be murdered.
Right.
Think about the scene in Return of the Jedi where the Ewoks have captured Luke and Han. And
right. They're like strung up by their ankles. Like,
yes.
Yeah. And so they convince them. They convince somebody
the doctors, there's a Doctors Without Borders operation
working
with the villagers. They come out, see these people, run out. By the way, the head doctor, Dr. Hadley, the bad guy from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Good call.
Belloc. So anyway, so Dr. Hadley comes out and says, no, these guys, you guys are the doctors from the UN or whatever, that Dr. Greenberg and Dr. Featherstone or whatever. And those guys are like, yeah, that's us, right? And so they're rescued from this. They go into the tent, meet all the other doctors. And
this
is the infamous
introduction of doctors, right?
Doctor. Every doctor that comes up says to them, doctor. They each say doctor, and then they go and move on to the next one, except for there's one very attractive woman who says doctor, and Dan Aykroyd says doctor, and Chevy Chase instantly softens his voice and goes into romantic eyes as doctor. And so they met all the doctors. They have a conversation about, hey, this, that, and the other. And then all the doctors are about to leave. So they all leave the tent. But before they leave, they say goodbye by saying, doctor.
Right.
And we go through the whole thing all over again.
Ah, here we are. I'm Hadley, internal medicine. Dr. Lafong, communicable diseases. Dr. Boyer, bacteriology. And Dr. Stinson, Marston and Gill of the Northampton Trauma Institute. And Dr. Imhouse of the Zurich Relief Fund. These are our newly arrived surgeons, Drs. Trowbridge and Greenbaum.
Doctor?
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 Doctor.
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 And doctor. Well, we miss anyone?
Why don't you gentlemen relax? The tribe's planning a raid on a Soviet tank division tomorrow. There'll be plenty for us to do then. Doctors?
Doctor.
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 Doctor. We're not doctors.
Again, great comedy writing.
Yeah, great comedy writing. That's like the origin. Like, that has been a joke for decades. That kind of thing.
I thought everyone knew where it was from. I did not realize that was a
No, I don't know. And so the blonde doctor, the female, comes back in and starts talking to Chevy Chase about performing surgery. Like, he's supposed to be this incredible surgeon. She wants to see him work. And he basically says, oh yeah, of course I'll do the surgery. Except, you know, I've got this nerve damage in my hand. I can't feel anything. And promptly puts that dead hand on her boob and just holds it there. And then pats her with the other one. Like, pats the other boob with his other hand.
With a good hand.
With a good hand.
Reminded me of Land of the Lost.
It did, yes. Right? Yes. Yeah, that's yes. Where that came from.
Another callback, right? So, you know, he basically says, hell, you know, even after the surgery, I get very depressed because right. I can't do the surgery anymore. Because he's offered Dan Aykroyd to be his hands in the process. And so, you know, she then says, hey, I'll be there for you. And they make out, right? They make out. Dan Aykroyd walks in and says, you know, says, make some, well, you guys cut it out or whatever, really, or something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're startled. They're looking at him. And Chevy Chase is doing the silent, you are fucking this up for me. Don't fuck this up. I've got some good going. And when she turns and looks at him, he looks longingly at her so instantly. Again, man, great comedy writing, great execution. Great
comedy writing, yeah. It's really like great physical comedy other than the G-force scene. And so, like, they decide, like, all right, we're going to do the surgery or whatever.
The surgery is on the chief of the tribe's brother, right?
Right.
And
right.
So they would consider a great insult if these particular doctors, because they're supposed to be the best surgeons in the world, don't do the surgery. That's why they got to do it.
Wait, hold on. There was another cameo there where Bob Hope just randomly hits a golf ball into the tent and shows up. And then also Terry Gilliam is one of the doctors.
Oh, that's right.
Terry Gilliam is one of the doctors. Right. So patient's on the table. He's got appendicitis. We got to, you know, these two idiots obviously don't know anything about surgery. So all they're doing is stalling. So they say, you know, the first step in an appendectomy. And then Dan Aykroyd dips below the operating table to open a medical book to just search for what the first step is. While Chevy Chase conveniently leans forward and stares into the face of the patient so that they can't see that he's ducked away. Comes back up. He says, you must shave the patient.
Chevy Chase starts putting shaving cream on the guy's face.
On the guy's face. And then I goes, forget about that. forget about it. So then they say, the next thing we must do is same thing. Dips below, looks in the book, comes back up, says, apply the anesthesia. And then Dan Aykroyd starts looking at, like, I can't remember what he picks up. He picks up something and starts, like, staring at it in the light while Chevy Chase is adjusting a gas lantern, like a lamp. Right. Like, they have no idea what they're doing. Someone, a doctor, says, hey, it's already been, you know, they already
did that. Can't you tell, like.
So he says, all right, finally we're going to make the incision. And takes the, no, Chevy Chase has to go get him.
He's just throwing instruments around, like trying to find a scalpel.
It's so loud.
Like, obviously the stuff is supposed to be sterile, like all these tools in there. He's just throwing things on the ground.
Well, Dan Aykroyd stands with his hand out without breaking eye contact with the other doctors.
Right.
Straight faced, right? Finally gets a scalpel, says, all right, the first incision, goes in, is about to cut into the dude's chest. One of the doctors says, that's the guy's chest. What are you doing? The appendix is nowhere near there. And Dan Aykroyd says, I was probing for muscle tone and skeletal girth. It's a new technique. We mock what we don't understand. So then, like, he goes back to make the incision, and he looks at the other doctors, and they shake their heads. And so he goes lower, and then they shake their heads. Yes, like, okay. Meanwhile, Chevy Chase is flirting and winking at the blonde doctor.
Right.
Like, just come.
No focus at all. It's finally, he's hovering. He's like squeamish about making the incision. And then as he's about to do it, the patient stands or sits up and dies.
Doctor checks the guy's pulse, says, this man is dead. And next thing we know, Aykroyd and Chevy Chase are walking out of the tent, taking off their scrubs and whistling. His whistle and walk away. The chief of the tribe comes out. Hey, stop those guys or whatever. They chase after them. They shoot after them. They escape in an ambulance.
Right.
Next thing you know, we are looking at the evil senator from X-Men and his other guy right there. They're somewhere like in New Mexico or whatever. They're in Nevada in the desert. They pull up to an abandoned drive-thru that is guarded by very militia-looking dudes. Guys are just dressed in jeans and stuff, but they got machine guns.
I mean, did you recognize those guys?
I they looked familiar. I didn't know who they were.
So it's Joel Cohen and Sam Raimi, two directors. And they had just made their first movies, and they were working on a movie together called Crime Wave. And then the rest of the agents that we go inside, there's another director. The one holding the gun is from Beverly Hills Cop. He directed Beverly Hills Cop. And then there's a screenwriter, Larry Cohen, another director, Michael Apted, and then B.B. King.
Yes, I recognize B.B. King. By the way, the basic training drill sergeant, he both played Kananga in Live and Let Die, if you've ever watched that James Bond movie, where he's the island dictator who also doubles as Mr. Big, the drug kingpin of New York. And he's also in I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker.
Yes.
He plays Jack Slade in I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker. So you're right. There are a lot of cameos in this movie. Anyways, they go there and say drive-in is closed. Drive-in movie theater is closed. And it says, oh, we're here to catch the matinee. They say all the code stuff. Here to catch the matinee.
Yeah, we're from Ace Tomato.
We're from Ace Tomato. So then they say, okay, well, go in there and go have yourselves a couple of Pepsis. And so they go inside and there's more, you know, agents there, and they say, hey, we were told to come get a couple of Pepsis, and they say two Pepsis coming right up, and that's the code. They go downstairs. It's a subterranean, super top secret military facility, right?
Right.
And they go in there. It's like a situation room. You got the screens. You got all these analysts on computers and stuff like that. They sit down, and one of the analysts says, sir, you have a collect call from Afghanistan.
And they're like, wait. And they find out it's Chevy Chase. And they're like, wait. He's like, wait.
They said that the operatives, they didn't meet their contacts. They've been ambushed, and now they're lost, and the Afghans are trying to kill them. And they say,
right. And he says, he told you this on a public phone. And he says, no. The AT&T operator told our operator.
They told the AT&T operator who told our operator, right? So they get on the phone with them and they're like, man, we're about da 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 da. And so they have the idea that as long as these idiots are out in the field, the Russians will still think that they are the actual operatives.
Right.
So they're still doing their job as a diversion from the real spies. So they say, go cross the border and into the Soviet Union and then try and get to this place, right? With the hopes that the Russians will hear them and intercept them, thus creating the perfect smokescreen.
Right. So they start going. They decide to be to blend in locally. They put on whatever local garb there is. They've got things wrapped around their heads, like they're on a transport bus that's like basically just a small school bus, right? Like some kind
of. It's just a bus. It's a bus. It's one of those like. If you've seen it, like if you've seen Romancing the Stone or any like those movies where it's like it's a bus in a third world country. It's
nothing. So they're trying to get to the road to Dushanbe. And it's going to put them essentially like in a strike zone. They ride the bus to the border. They see the woman doctor.
Yes.
Driving on the same road in a Jeep. They're stopped at like a toll stop, military kind of checkpoint, whatever. And so Chevy Chase goes over to try to make a move on her, she says not to touch her. She rides off on a horse. He goes and tells Dan Aykroyd, like, I don't know what her deal is. And he's like, oh, well, she's like holding this high sophisticated like equipment to scramble signals, all this stuff. Like, so we kind of find out she's probably a spy too.
Yes.
And then Austin says, maybe your dick's not dumb. And Chevy Chase says, got me through high school.
Yes. God damn, so many.
That's great a good lines. Line. That's a
so,
good line.
So many great lines, man.
Yeah.
By the way, also, this is the scene where when they realize that she's a spy, this is the scene where, in true Family Guy fashion, they say the name of the movie.
Right.
In the movie. So it says, they're spies, but not necessarily us. They're not spies like us.
Right.
He said it.
So then they're on a camel. They're chasing or they're following the female doctor, who's also a spy. The camel just gives up at one point. Honestly, I thought they could have cut the scene. I really didn't understand this.
Yeah, I think they just wanted to get him on a camel.
Yeah, just get him on a camel. And then I think it was just to show like, oh, yeah, they got to walk. Right. So they're walking basically along this this road that is close to the mountains, and they're carrying all this gear and all this, you know, all this clothing and stuff. And Chevy Chase is like, why are we carrying this? And Dan Aykroyd says, trust me, when we get on the other side of this, it's going to be Arctic temperatures. And then cut scene to they're wearing all this like giant fur and stuff to keep warm in the snow.
It's funny.
How far do we think they walked? Like 50 miles?
Something like that.
That's
right?
Not the kind of movie it is. It's not fucking Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy where it's like, well, how did they get to this? It's not Game of Thrones where like, how'd they get there that fast? It's a silly ass movie, man. 50 miles, 5 miles. The point is, they followed them, they got there, and now they're dressed ridiculously in this garb.
Yeah, they're dressed in the garb of like the movie poster, essentially. Right. So let's see. Now they get stopped by patrol. They figure out that they've basically given their whole plan because they were speaking in English. They didn't know these patrolmen like spoke English. And so Dan or Chevy Chase is like, no, let's get captured. And then the U.S. Department can negotiate a release for us. And Dan Aykroyd's like, nah, fuck that. He just dives away down the hill. They fire after him. And he gets away and Chevy Chase gets caught.
Yo, so I'm rewatching this scene here because it's got all the lines where I'm just looking for the Burt Reynolds theater. Like, I'm just, yo, he's being interrogated by a Russian, like,
because our the people that they escaped from who intercept them initially, the classic 80s guys, they're in this whole, like, little shack that has captured Chevy Chase.
But they're doing shitty Russian accents now.
Right. Now they're doing bad Russian accents. They're threatening to cut off his fingers. They're like, say, tell us your objective. And so he makes one up. He says, I'm here to assassinate your premier. And they're like, oh, we knew it. We got to take him to headquarters. Cut to Dan Aykroyd has found the fake the female doctor, who's also a spy. Her partner has been gunned down by more Russian soldiers or patrolmen. And so this whole time she's trying to convince him to help her finish the project, which is like intercepting this Russian missile. And he's like, no, I got to go save my partner. And so he rides in on this horse, right? Rides in on this horse, firing these Uzis, doesn't hit anybody, like basically clears the way to get Chevy Chase out of there. He goes to pull Chevy Chase off on the horse. Chevy Chase pulls him off the horse because they don't know what they're doing.
But by the way, I found the lines that I was looking for during the interrogation. One is, why are you here? It says, why is anyone here? I believe it was Jean-Paul. And then it says, and then to which the Russian says, for every 30 seconds you don't give me an answer, I'm going to cut off a finger. And Chevy J says, mine or yours.
Right. And he says, yours. And he like gives us like, damn it.
Damn.
Look like.
Like there was a chance. Yeah, that's
fucking
great, man.
So now they're in a gunfight. Basically, it's all Dan Aykroyd shooting at these guys, them shooting back. The patrolmen throw a grenade. Chevy Chase catches it. It's like, what's this? And he says, and Dan Aykroyd says, nothing you want. So he like stands up and casually tosses it back into the cabin or the little shack. It's basically the longest grenade fuse of all time, right? Like this grenade is like up for like 15 seconds.
I like how you and Maze have this thing for like at the oddest time, like that's not realistic.
No, it's not that it's not realistic. I'm just like, it is, they could have sped that up a little bit. Like it was too long on the G-force thing. It was too long on this grenade bit. That's it. It's not the realism of it. It's not like, all right, get the joke. Let's go.
I like the grenade joke.
All right.
I thought it was appropriate. So they escape. They're walking and they hear music, right? and it's clearly like American music, right?
Right.
So they creep above the ridge and see it is the nuclear missile right there and a bunch of Russian soldiers, but they are jamming out to this American music, right? So that to mention these soldiers, by the way, I'm sorry, when he hears the song, like in the Dan Aykroyd's Soul Finger by the Barclays, Chevy Chase says, man, they must be having trouble getting the gigs, right? So then they look over the ridge, they see it's soldiers. By the way, these soldiers are women, right?
No,
right? Or no, is that not?
No, yet? There's two that are women.
Okay.
Because there's like this, like, sort of like almost Helen Mirren-esque soldier. That's the best way to kind of describe her. Who I think they say is like their mother or something like that.
They're scientists too. I thought that they were.
Oh yeah. Maybe they're scientists, like
technicians. That's why they were there, but they do all have guns.
Yeah. And then there is one hot one that comes out of the tent, like basically in underwear and like half of this jumpsuit. Who then causes Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase to fight over the binoculars.
Which again is... I mean, like, yeah, did you not think that was funny?
I thought it was
like,
hilarious.
Okay, all right. It's not incredibly complex or highbrow, but it's just the way it's executed is so perfect. The way they fight over...
No, the physical comedy, I'm telling you, like, I'm in except for the G-Force thing. G-Force thing was really stupid.
G-Force is
so the fake female doctor spy gives this, like, passionate speech to convince them to help her with the project. Says, you're not going to kill anybody. We got tranquilizer guns.
Including the line, 2.5 years preparing for this penetration.
Right, to which Chevy Chase, it cuts to Chevy Chase's face and he smiles. And so the U.S. base starts arming these like reflectors that are on the ground. The spies come up with this plan to like pretend to be aliens, right? So they go down. They've got these flares up in the sky or up in the mountain or the hill. They come down with all this like weird glowing stuff, all these lights and everything, trying to pretend to be aliens. The motherly Russian basically tells a story of like when she was in Lithuania, her father used to tell her about these creatures that, you know, weren't from Earth and all this stuff. And then they fire at the ground in front of them. Chevy Chase says, oh, follow my lead. We're going to, follow my lead. He pretends to die. Then Dan Aykroyd pretends to die. And then the flares go out and they pop up and they like hit him with the tranquilizer gun. So they've neutralized him completely. Then they're essentially just, typing in these code sequences into the missile that they think are going to disarm it.
Yeah.
They think it's going to disarm it. And turns out what it does is it arms it and it fires it off towards the US.
Yeah. So the missiles are launched, but obviously inadvertently. So now they have to try to find a way to avoid nuclear war basically starting on by accident.
Yeah. And except we find out that it wasn't an accident. Like some of the military official. So they use this like reflector system that's supposed to hit the missile that's in like space, like essentially goes into space and then drops down. Right. Yes, and so like
Star Wars was an actual program.
Yeah.
That Reagan wanted, like these lasers in the sky that would shoot down missiles right. But go ahead.
And so they fire off the pulse. It misses the missile, to which the government, like the general and the colonel and everything are like, that's okay. We want it this way. So they're trying to set up a nuclear war to basically justify all the defense spending and not, all this military action and show that like peace isn't you know, that possible. We need to keep fighting, keep fighting. So they're trying to start a war between Russia and America. The Cold War is going to become hot, essentially. And so while all this happens, Dan Aykroyd calculates that they've got about 40 minutes to live between that hitting that missile hitting America and America retaliating with the missile of their own. And so they pair off. Chevy Chase or Chevy Chase is like essentially like says to the fake female doctor, he's like, "You want to go out with a bang?" And she says, "If we were in a bar, I'd throw a drink in your face. But considering the circumstances," and they walk off into a tent. and then the older female Russian soldier pairs off with a guy. Two guys pair off, and that leaves the hot Russian soldier with Dan Aykroyd. And then as they're about to sleep with each other, I don't know if they have slept with each other.
I think they've already slept with each other.
So because he goes, "I can't believe it's been 15 minutes since I set off a nuclear war." So clearly, like, it wasn't long sex by any means. And he goes, "In 15 minutes until we're about to be dead." and then he gets this idea from just talking while she's like doting over him.
Think about his guidance counselor said he wouldn't amount to anything, and then he says, "Oh, guidance, like some guidance."
So he figures out a way to reverse the missiles and to deflect it off course and everything. So they put in these sequences. They have Chevy Chase holding these wires together that's electrocuting him.
I forgot. So he's got this idea. He runs out of the tent. And like calls to the other Russians in his broken Russian, like, "Come out. Like, I gotta go finally figure it out." Chevy Chase and the fake doctor show up. And Chevy Chase, like, as he's told them, "Hey, this is what's going on. They're doing this." Chevy Chase shows up and says, "What's going on?" And they go, "Oh, you had a tent?"
Right. So Chevy Chase basically went to go fuck her in like the snow or something. So they reverse the thing, it deflects the missile off course. And it goes and explodes into space. So everyone's saved. The military officials get arrested. What was the other cameo here, Maze?
It's just another director. It's this director Bob Swaim. But you missed that the stray laser that missed the rocket destroys the MTV satellite.
Right.
I think that was my favorite stupid joke of the movie.
Yeah. That's a really good one. Yeah, because MTV had been around for what, like 5 years at that point?
Yeah,
something like that. And so, yeah, it was like basically the world was going to end, but at least they destroyed MTV.
Yeah, just because it was so obnoxious at the time,
right?
Like they were like, "We're cool," and da da da. And I was like, "Shut the fuck up!" And
right.
it's so nice that now in 2019 we've done away with obnoxious MTV and they've matured and really gotten the respect they deserve.
Yeah, now they've turned it around. They've got, you know, teen pregnancies and the hills and everything. Yeah. And so then the military officials get arrested. We cut to Chevy Chase being interviewed outside of essentially like this boardroom, and he's saying, like, you know, "These are very sensitive negotiations. The slightest, you know, misstep, misuse of language, or even, you know, wrong look could really upset things. So, you know, we just got to keep this going and keep everything, you know, very delicate." So he goes back into the room, and the press is like, "Oh my God, a very intense situation, a very dire situation." Cuts in the room, finds out that they're figuring out how to divide up all these like nuclear areas by playing a game of Trivial Pursuit.
Yeah. Oh man, what a good
movie. And loses the Eastern Bloc, and then that's when the movie ends.
Let me just say right now, man, like, what a great movie! What a great movie! What a great ending!
We're going straight to Phob or File.
Okay,
Maze, do you have everything else? Or anything else?
Not really. I mean, I don't really like Chevy Chase that much. I don't find him that funny. I like Dan Aykroyd a lot, and I liked him in this movie, but it definitely wasn't bad. That's for sure.
See, I love Lampoon Chevy Chase, right? I think on most Chevy Chase things, I know you're not supposed to like him anymore. Most Chevy Chase things, like, I really like the comedy. And I'm not a huge physical comedy guy, but like I for whatever reason, like, he was charming enough or whatever. Like I've been in on a lot of Chevy Chase stuff.
Dude, it's like up to like 88, the guy was gold.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, as far as just being able, like I said, that kind of quick non sequitur one liners that nobody actually reacts to. It's kind of like it's like, Zach, you know what it's like? It's like when we did the show, like when we did the podcast last week. And every time I called my man Amistad. Amistad, you would just say the gentleman from Amistad. Just say it quietly. And I purposely didn't react to it because that's so much funnier.
Right.
If like people are just listening every time I hear you correct me, the gentleman from Amistad.
We were on NBA radio the other day together, right? And you decided like whenever a caller asked how we were doing, you were just gonna say Apple time. And there was nothing, one time, Maze. This caller calls in and we take the call and I'm like, hey, how's it going? He goes, hey, how are you guys? And Amin goes, Apple time. The guy goes, good. Like he had no idea how to react. Like it was just perfect. It's kind of like when on Levitard's show, right? Like they'll do the thing where essentially two different conversations are happening at the same time. And I fucking love that. Like
I love it too.
Yeah. Like it's one of the funnier things they do to me. Chevy Chase is the master of this in movies. So yeah, like I'm in, like, I like that humor from him.
But so, and that was really at his prime. That was when you think about Spies Like Us, you think about, Fletch Lives. You think about National Lampoon's, at least the first one. You know, it starts to fall off a little bit after that to me. But that was his wheelhouse, and he was excellent at it, man. And, like to me, like I don't have to like the dude. I don't think he's a good dude or anything like that. And most everything that he's done since then has been trash, other than Community, which he then fucked up promptly because he's a fuck up and trash human being. But like to watch this movie, be like, oh, that shit wasn't funny. Come on, man. Like, you can't not. When he says the whole scene where he says, stop it right there and I'll bring back the son. Followed with, this is my sister. You guys can have her. I hear she's really good. Yo, there's no way you're not laughing at that,
no,
man.
No, that's such a. No, and he delivers it perfectly.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He really does. Like,
the execute. There's a lot of stuff in this movie where the joke itself may not be in and of itself that funny,
but he sells it.
Him and Aykroyd, they executed so well.
Yeah. Little trivia. The movie originally ended with the destruction of the world, but test audiences didn't like it, so they shot this other ending. Oh. I kind of wish it had been the destruction of the world.
I kind of like this ending, to be honest with you.
It's not bad. Like, the idea that they would finish it with Trivial Pursuit, like, that's how they appreciate this big...
That these two idiots would now become in charge of, like...
Right.
global nuclear, like, negotiations and stuff.
Right.
I mean, if it had ended with the end of the world, it would have been way too much like Dr. Strangelove.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair. All right, we've got nothing else, I guess. Because there's no Tony Medley for this, right?
There's no Tony Medley for this. Is there a really harsh review that you saw?
The worst I saw was the Chevy Chase thing that I mentioned, and someone saying like there was loose progression of recycled Abbott and Costello riffs, which I just thought was, I just didn't think, like, none of these reviews were scathing. I didn't think any of the reviews were accurate.
I agree. So let's go right into File or Phobe. You know what it is for me. This is a strong file. This is literally one of my favorite comedies of all time. Definitely one of my favorites of the 80s. I honestly can't see why anyone wouldn't like this movie. And didn't even know that nobody liked this movie until a week ago.
Right. Maze, what about you?
It's a file. I didn't love it, like I said, but it was definitely funny and there was some really funny bits. I think the doctor scene is just a classic.
Oh, so good.
I didn't think it aged well. That's for sure.
What do you say it doesn't age well? Like, I guess other than the understanding of like the Soviet Union was this thing. Like, what part of it was like, oh, that's such a, like, 80s joke.
Like, him, like, Chevy Chase being such a horn dog? Was that a...
Well, Chevy Chase in general, I don't think his characters age well, but the Star Wars, it's very much Cold War era. Like, I think it would have been funnier to me if I had been processing the Cold War in the news at the time or something like that. Like, it just seemed very rote and predictable.
I guess, to me, the overarching... plot, yes, but the moment to moment enjoying the movie, it's not like you really have to understand the tension of the Cold War to really get these jokes. No, they're just fucking funny jokes.
Yeah, I like the jokes. I didn't necessarily like the way that they strung them together.
Interesting.
Okay. Zach, by the way, before you give yours, I want to say one thing that this movie also reminded me of. Now that I'm hearing Maze's kind of criticism, it reminds me of Horrible Bosses too. Where it's like, the plot doesn't really matter, dude. Just laugh at the jokes, right? And in that way. So with that being said, your review. Earlier you teased it. You said he's watching in two different mindsets.
Two different mindsets. Well, one, I want to point out something to Maze here in the audience is that I feel like this was a last ditch attempt by Amin to curry favor with me in the movie by mentioning Horrible Bosses 2 because he knows I fucking love Horrible Bosses 2. We talk about this often. Like, I don't know if there's a time we've gotten together in the last like 6 months, I mean, where we haven't brought up this movie and started laughing about it. So I see what you did with that attempt there. But I will say this. So I came in with two mindsets. One, if I was watching it back then, would I have found it funny? Now, obviously, I was 3 years old when it came out, but you know what I mean. In terms of like, if I watched this when I was a kid, right? Like, would I have found this movie funny? Like, I've watched a shitload of comedies when I was a kid. Would I have found it funny? And two, the mindset of what would it hold up today for me? So with the first one, Amin, I will say, I fully believe I would have found this funny if I watched it back then. Like, fully believed. In terms of it being something that holds up today, it's a sweep for File. I think it holds up. Yes! I will watch it again. I thoroughly enjoyed this. I'm still gonna dig my heels in on the G-Force. I thought that was super stupid. I didn't think that was funny. I thought it was overplayed. I didn't think that the whole part, even with the "you guys gonna get some coffee," I didn't think any of that was funny. But the rest of the movie, I'm in on. Like, I thought it was hilarious. Like, I was laughing. So, and a little like too much information for the audience. I had food poisoning last night. I'm not in a good mood. I've been shitting myself constantly. I'm super dehydrated. Watched the movie anyway. Still. Died. Like, love this movie. Complete File across.
We are our first 100%er.
Yeah.
Oh man, I'm so excited.
I think it's safe to say that. Do we think Tony Medley is a Chevy Chase guy? I'm gonna go say no.
No way. You think? I go opposite because Tony Medley also has a very political slant. You think Chevy Chase gets it like it's a raw deal? He's a real funny guy, not like that fake ass Will Ferrell.
But yeah, Chevy Chase is he problematic? Is he a dickhead? Yes. Do I find his movies from the 70s and 80s funny? I do. I just do. And I think this movie was great.
I can't stand Mel Gibson, but you ain't going to tell me Lethal Weapon wasn't a great movie. Like,
that's a great point. I still watch them. I still watch Lethal Weapons when they're on. I can't help it. That's going to do for Cinephobe. For Amin Alhassan, for Anthony Mays, I'm Zach Harper. Thanks for subscribing to the Patreon. Tell your friends about patreon.com/countthedings. Check out all of our other podcasts across The Athletic. And, of course, Count the Dings, Bomb, Mailbag, all that good stuff. And we will talk to you next time.